We've slipped in the U.S., but also I think many economies around the world have slipped from having market economies to becoming market societies. A market economy is a tool for organizing productive activity, but a market society is a place where everything is up for sale. And it's a place where markets and market values reach into spheres of life beyond material goods, from education, health, to personal relations, family relations, national security. Markets and market values increasingly govern all of these things, and I'm suggesting we need to think hard about where markets serve the public good and where they don't belong.
What are some examples of things that now have an economic value that did not just a few decades ago?
Take education. In some places in the U.S., school districts are trying to improve and motivate academic performance by offering cash incentives to students for good grades or high test scores. In one place, they offer $2 to young children for each book they read. The aim is admirable, to motivate the students. There's a risk, though, that a cash incentive can crowd out the attitudes that ultimately education tries to inculcate, or should, the love of learning for its own sake. I think what's changed is over the past 3 decades, we've widely accepted the assumption that markets are the primary instruments for achieving the public good. In some ways, it goes back to the early 80s with Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, but it really continued, this assumption, in the years following. And after the Cold War, I think there was a kind of market triumphalism that set in many places, a sense that we, capitalist societies, had prevailed. But that assumed that faith, that capitalism is one thing, and that markets are appropriate for every sphere of life. Capitalism comes in many different varieties, and it doesn't require that we transform our societies into places where everything is up for sale.
One example that you use in the book is the simple idea of a queue, waiting in line, and how that's even changed.
The basic principle of the queue is first come, first served. It's a democratic principle. We observe it at amusement parks, for example. There are often long lines for popular rides. But recently, even in amusement parks, you can buy a more expensive ticket and go right to the head of the line. In airports, there are now often long lines at the security checkpoints, but you can buy a more expensive ticket or simply pay directly to the airline for the privilege of going to the head of the line. Now, airports and amusement parks, these are not the most grievous examples of the moral corrosive way that markets can operate, but they are signs of the time that more and more the affluent are able, in effect, to buy their way to the head of the line.
We see this down the street here in D.C., where people wait in line to get into congressional hearings. How does this, in your view, corrupt the process?
One of the most striking examples I ran across when I was assembling material for this book was the line-standing industry in Washington, D.C. I didn't know it existed before. There are a limited number of seats in congressional hearings or in the Supreme Court when there's an important oral argument. Lots of people want to attend, including lobbyists for the congressional hearings. But the lobbyists don't want to stand in line, sometimes in the cold or in the rain, for 24 hours or 72 hours. So they hire line-standing companies, who in turn hire homeless people and others willing to wait for an hourly pay. And then the lobbyists take their place just before the hearing begins. This is another example of buying your way to the head of the line. But doesn't it really put representative government, in a way, or access to it, up for sale? I think it raises a serious question.
In a capitalist free market society, is the trend that you describe in your book simply inevitable?
I don't think it's inevitable that market economies devolve into market societies where everything is up for sale. There may be a tendency in that direction. But whether that tendency is played out in any society really depends on how vigorous and robust is the public debate about how we should use markets, about where markets serve the public good, and where they don't belong. So what we really need for capitalism to flourish, we have to have a public debate about how to keep markets in their place, not to get rid of markets, so that other social institutions, from family life to health, to education, to civic life, can flourish according to values and virtues and attitudes and norms that markets may not honor and that money cannot buy.